Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Moraz. Today we're joined by Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent as we discuss city business. And Mayor, as always, thanks so much for coming over.
We really appreciate you having us on.
Well, I know that you're working with the budget as you prepare for 2018-19, and how are things going with that process?
Well, we, you know, there was a process in place when I got there. It was done the right way. We've kind of tweaked it a little bit. But what we try to do, and we're different than some other local entities, we try to make sure that we have representation of our council on our budget committee. When I took over as mayor in my administration, the first thing we discussed was the handling of funds and the being a good steward of taxpayers' money. So we've been very fortunate. We had your wife, of course, that was our city clerk. And after Joni left and went to the St. Clair Foundation, we were fortunate enough to get Chrissy Cunningham working along with our city attorney, Joyce Stevens. And we rotate three of our six council members each of the years I've been there. And the reason we do that is we want to be total transparency. And then we also bring in, during the process, all of our department heads. And they bring in a list of wants and needs. We also do that with admin. We have five departments. Admin, which is the one I preside over on a daily basis. Fire, police, parks and rec, and public works. So what we do, we sit down, we go over this, we literally go over it line by line, pencils, erasers, paper. It's quite the process. We will meet four or five times before we actually present it to council. That's different than some other folks do it in other areas. But the reason we do that is so there's no surprises. You know, we're bringing this in. The primary goal of and the primary role in city government of the council is the legislative branch. Their goal is to pass a budget. It is technically called the mayor's budget. The mayor is responsible for creating it. The legislature is responsible for passing it. And then the mayor is responsible and his staff for maintaining it on a daily basis. So that's the checks and balances in local government, the way we run it. So when we do that, you know, we make sure everything's above board. That way there's no surprises. And so far, because of the awesome staff I have, things are running really smoothly. We're going to have a nice carryover again. We're going to have a lot of the wants and needs that our people want. So we feel pretty comfortable about it.
At this point right now, I know you deal with different challenges every single year when you put a spending plan together. Is there a certain challenge that has your eye right now kind of as I don't want to say a red flag, but an issue that you feel like needs to be dealt with front and center?
Since I've been there almost 4 years now, we have had a reduction every year, a slight reduction in the road funds. And a lot of that's due to the battle they had with the gasoline tax, and where they finally had to go in, the state legislature had to go in and put in a actual floor. You know, you always hear them putting in ceilings, but a couple years ago they had to put the floor in that. Well, that directly affects what we get for our road fund to pave, to make repairs. So, as you know, infrastructure nationwide, and it's no different statewide or even locally, is something that requires a lot of money and a regular attention to detail. So what we're doing now is we always want to make sure we have a little extra in there. We got a lot of paving to do. There's been a lot of construction in Morehead, which we're very thankful for. But for example, the good folks on 2nd Street and Elizabeth Avenue have seen a lot of potholes that have came up over the last 3 years with the construction going on campus, primarily around Adrian Dorn Center. That we hope to have that finished, according to Dr. Morgan, by late summer, early fall, and our goal is to pave that. So there's a lot of heavily traveled areas. When you have a line break in the middle of the winter, utility plant board goes up, their job is to do what? Fix the line. So they fix the line, they do a hot patch in the winter. There's no pavement being made in the winter. It's only made usually between May and October, so we can't pave those. So we've got a lot of those areas where utility plant board has done a great job in patching water lines and such, but those develop over time with the temperature changes and all the road traffic. So that's our main thing. We always want to make sure we do that. And then, of course, there are other things that we always want to make sure we have enough are for our capital projects. You know, we're looking at this police and fire station. That's still on the books. We've got our splash pad. We've got the potential now. We've applied for a grant to possibly look at starting a senior center. We've got a lot of construction that's in the hopper that we always want to make sure we have the debt service covered. So red flags, you know, to be honest with you, you always have to have enough reserve. We want to have at least $1 million in reserve in case of a catastrophe or major road damage or anything like that. We've got that and then some. So we just try to base it on what's happened the last 4 or 5 years historically and make sure we have enough to cover those.
Well, you mentioned the loss of state road funds. How much have you lost? And the one thing I was kind of curious, too, is, as part of this is I know that tax revenue is up because of all the construction in the area. Is that enough to make up for that loss?
Well, it's ran between 10 and 20% over the last 3 years, what we usually get the year before.
What's the total amount generally?
You know, generally it's around $200,000. And in the last few years, I think it's down now to about $160,000. We're still actually waiting on the numbers from the state. We still haven't got those yet because we got to plug those in. We're estimating based off the last 3 years. What, you know, we have that. You made a great point, and that's one of the reasons we talked about the insurance premium tax. We're trying to find other ways to make up for the losses. Here's what people need to realize. Not only have we realized a nice little bump in our occupational taxes with all the construction going on with the jail, MSU construction, St. Clair construction, and all the other construction, that's going to be going away here in the fall. But also because of a occupational tax sharing plan we had with the county for Sealmaster and Guardian, that ran out in December of 2017, this past December. So we're going to lose money there.
How much are you going to lose altogether?
Well, let me get to this last point, I think I've got it all added up. And then also, we're grateful that we've got this $28 million MCTC out there, but that moved from city limits out to the industrial park. So all of it told, probably it's in the neighborhood of $300,000 or $400,000. Now, of that, about $300,000 of it is occupational tax based on the bump we got over the last few years from all the construction, but another $100,000 or so is, I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me, but it's in excess of $100,000 from the loss of the occupational tax sharing with the county and also from losing MCTC. Now, these are all good problems to have because we have very good industry here. The MCTC is going to bring more and more people in. It will eventually work out to where it's all going to even out, in my opinion. But in the short term, that's one of the reasons why we implemented the insurance premium tax, and that's one of the reasons why we continue to really try to make sure we have a strong recreation program so we can recoup some of that through recreational tourism and those type of things.
The insurance premium tax that you're looking at, remind me how much it is and where does that stand right now as you discuss it with council?
It's in. We voted it in. The problem is, and it's not a problem, it's just a delayed gratification on this, meaning that we will not see that money until next year because you have to collect it over a year. It will start this year, and we will see some of that coming in probably around spring of next year. But it can be cumulative over the years. Now, it's not a lot of money that we're asking for extra on there for the cost will be passed along to the consumers from the insurance companies. But, you know, we were one of only a handful that did not have it at 10%. We were at like 4%. And when you look at all the areas surrounding us, you know, they rely on that. For example, my good friend Gary Williamson, who is the outgoing mayor in Mount Sterling, told me in Mount Sterling alone, they had 10% across the board. 15% is allowed by law. So 10% across the board is what they had on all their insurance premiums. It netted the city of Mount Sterling annually $1.1 million in addition to occupational taxes and everything else. So we won't be that. We won't get that much. Our estimates are somewhere around $300,000, $350,000. But just like I told you before, how much did we lose in occupational taxes? Around $300,000. So once it gets rolling and we get 1 year under our belt, we may have a little bit of lean here going in, but probably after next year, it should help us.
Now, is this an increase in the premium tax or an implementation of the premium
tax? It is an increase on four of the taxes we had, and then it is an implementation on the other three. There's about 10 different tax streams you can different insurance streams you can tax, and we were only taxing four. And so,
what's
the
increase on the four?
Well, we went from four up until I think we went to eight, I believe. Or seven, I'm sorry. And then we took the ones we weren't doing at all and brought them up to seven. And here's a point. The county does not do that yet. In Montgomery County doesn't do it either. In other areas where the county and the city do it, they use that if when they don't have a restaurant tax or a tourism tax, they'll use that to fund those type of capital projects. We're fortunate enough, we've got a very active tourism. We don't have to do that. So I doubt if the county will do it at this time. But the county's looking at, as you will talk to Judge Blevins soon, a lot of infrastructure issues too with bridges and those type of things. And I know that's one of the things he's talked about doing as well. So it's not something that will be noticed that much by your consumers because it's based on your premiums. But it's something that will have a cumulative effect and can help us from raising individual taxes or occupational taxes or those type of things and have a bigger bite to your wallet.
Which taxes had you been, or rather, which premiums or insurance?
I don't have it in front of me.
Which ones had you been taxing, and ones are new?
To be honest with you, I'll have to tell you that next time. I apologize. Okay. I didn't know.
But there'll be seven total.
There'll be seven total across
them,
yeah.
Okay, and you mentioned something that we always talk about, the police fire station project. It's something that it's a continuing effort to get done. Where are you right now?
We're going to be meeting next week with the owners of that who own the property, making the official negotiation for that, and hope to have an answer back from them by the 1st of June. And then we will be able to announce that we're going to release RFPs for the project to get designs and architectural plans and move forward. So don't know if I'll be able to come in on the June front page, but hopefully by no later than July we'll make that announcement.
So you feel like this thing is very close to being wrapped up?
I feel like this thing is very close to being wrapped up.
Obviously, this is something that you've been working on for now a few years, and it's a major project, but it's an important project and one that I know that is important to the city as it moves forward. I mean, we talk about, obviously, police and fire protection for the residents who are here, but at the same time, I would think this also has to be, in a way, an economic development issue, because when someone wants to move here, they want to know that they have good police and fire protection.
Based on the latest FBI stats on safest areas to live in, there's approximately 400 and some cities in the state of Kentucky. Obviously, some of them are larger and smaller and whatnot, but we are consistently in the 15-16 range with the safest cities based on FBI information on crime that they have in their database. Anytime you can promote a safe area, great schools like we have with the Round County School System, the opportunity to expand your education afterwards with Morehead State University and MCTC and other avenues we have, it all adds to livability and it all adds to attractiveness for businesses, families, young professionals, MSU staff, St. Clair Medical Center, all that goes together. So, yes, we're very proud of it. And I keep going back to this. It's always been a battle on Facebook and social media when this comes up about, well, we need a pool. We don't need a police and fire station. Trust me. You know, nobody knows how important it is to have recreation, and we're trying to fill that gap. But here's the other thing I want people to understand. If you expect first-class service when you pick up and call 911, then the least we can do are give our men and women who provide that service first-class equipment, first-class facilities, first-class vehicles, so they can provide the service that you pay for with your tax dollars. Right now, need I not remind everybody, we are running a police station in a 1930s post office, and our main fire station is what used to be a 3-bay car wash when I was a kid. And we do more with less. Our police and fire departments are awesome. They do more with less. They get grants. They do things that people do not know they do to keep things going so that we can provide the best service. I think we have the best first responders in the state in our community. So all we're doing is going to give them additional tools, save money for the taxpayers, and make a place where we will be eventually the safest place in Kentucky, in my opinion.
I was going to say, this is going to make the community a lot safer. And people never think about that, for the most part, until they need one of those types of services.
You never think of it until you need it. You're exactly right.
Again, our guest today on Front Page, Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent. We'll come back with more on the program right after this.
There are many ways to connect with Morehead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Morehead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Welcome back to today's Front Page. Again, Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent has joined us. And Mayor Trent, there was something intriguing. I was out of town when you had the city council meeting here this past Monday, but something in regards to a proposed opioid litigation project caught my eye right at the top of the agenda for this week's meeting, and I was hoping you'd talk about that.
Well, back when OxyContin became such a big seller back, I believe it was in the 1996, I think, was when it was introduced. It was a huge boon for Purdue Pharma, who made and manufactured that. Well, one of the unintended consequences from that particular drug was the fact that they marketed it to the federal government and the FDA that it was not addictive, that it has a delayed reaction. It could last over so many hours and whatnot. Well, very quickly it became that it was very addictive. And so when that started really hitting home was in Clay County, Kentucky, around 1997, 1998. And we became Eastern Kentucky, Southeastern Kentucky in particular, became ground zero for the worst narcotic opioid addiction problem in the history of the United States. And that caused our Congressman Hal Rogers to go to bat and start what's called Operation Unite. Operation Unite was a program to combat that, do drug education, allow federal funds through grant money to help people to go to rehabilitation, and also there was an education component. I was fortunate enough to work for Unite for a year in the education component, and I was fortunate enough to be along with four or five other folks in this community to start our local Operation Unite because of that. So we all know the devastation that opioids have caused. Right now, the headlines are grabbing our heroin, and back about 15 years ago, meth was a thing. But still, what's been consistent, if you ask any of our undercover officers or any officer in the Southeast Kentucky or Northeast Kentucky for that matter, what's the number one killer of people? What's the number one drug of choice? They're going to say still opioids. And although they've battled some on OxyContin, it has been devastating to Eastern Kentucky and many parts of the country. So this law firm went together with several other law firms, and they came together, had a class action suit against these companies, and they did it on a nuisance and a fraud basis that not only was it advertised for one thing, it turned out to be something else. It's caused a tremendous health hazard and a health nuisance for the people of the United States. So it's a huge, huge lawsuit. They just came to us and asked us if we wanted to join it. It's not going to cost the city any money. If we get any money back, it will be after they recoup their expenses, if there's a settlement, which we assume there will be. But it's the same type of class action suit that was brought against the big tobacco company several years ago, same type of thing. So we are going to go ahead and join that because, you know, we're not as hard hit as some of our friends and neighbors in Southeast Kentucky, but still we're all affected, and our hospitals and our clinics and those type of things are affected. So we think it's a good thing. You know, money can't solve everything. I don't think it's that's the whole thing. It's to hold somebody accountable is the main reason for this. So anytime you can hold people accountable for what they have done to your community, we have to join in that fight.
And I know that the state is looking at getting into this. Would it be part of the state's lawsuit against these big pharmaceutical makers?
That I don't know. I know there's several of them. For example, Kentucky League of Cities is going after them as well because it affects insurance premiums for all of its cities. And I know they're doing theirs on their own. I think the Attorney General Beshear is also looking into it from a state as a whole. I think there's going to be several people coming at it. We have not heard about whether we will join them or not, but they were asked to join this group with that's got some other area counties in it as well.
You mentioned employee health insurance. I know that's a concern for the city right now. That cost continues to rise. And the city, I believe, pays over 90%, almost maybe 95% of the cost for the plans for its employees and I guess also their dependents. Where do things kind of go from here? Are you worried about that?
Well, that's something what's concerning us every day. For example, we got the lowest rise in percentage-wise in our quotes this year. We've been averaging about 13% each year of the quotes we're getting from our insurance company partners with KLC. This year it was 9%. But, Chuck, if you take that 9%, this year will put us over $1 million paying for 68 employees' benefits. We have one of the best benefit plans, maybe the best in the state. We pay 94% of all of our employees' insurance benefits. In other words, if you have a family plan, it equals out to roughly $16,000 a year for you in insurance. If you are single, it averages out to around $8,000 or $9,000. So what they try to do is we try to balance that out. We realize we cannot sustain that. We can't do that. Last year we were at 930-some thousand. This year with a 9% increase, it's projected to be over $1 million. So what we're going to do, like many other folks have been forced to do, we're going to try to see a way we can reduce that percentage. We're looking at alternative plans right now. Nothing has been set in stone. One of the things we're working on before the budget gets its first reading is do a something like some other people are doing where we pay 100% of the employee and maybe a percentage of their family instead of doing the 94%. We're also looking at a small raise to offset some of those costs. So that's all fluid at this point. We're working on that. Hope to have that decided by next week when we have the special meeting. And when that does happen, we have the final budget, I'll be able to give you more solid numbers at our next talk.
It's a real conundrum, isn't it?
Very, very much. Because here's the thing. You know, we can't pay people a lot of money. I mean, obviously, you know, when you're dealing with taxpayers' money, you know, I tell people all the time, we can't pay you probably what you're worth. We can't afford that without raising taxes on individuals across the board. So, you know, how we offset that is we have great benefits. And that's how most companies are doing now. It's a total juggling act because if you want your first of all, your employees are your number one asset. That's your number one thing that helps your community. You got to do it. At the same time, you have to balance what you can do and how much you can pay for benefits, for example. So we constantly juggle between how much we can pay them hourly or on salary and how much we can pay their benefits. So at the same time, we do want to do right by them. So it is not a simple, it takes a lot of thought, input, and we take it very seriously.
We've got just about a minute and a half left on the program, and I wanted to ask you about this proposal from Celerity for broadband planning. I mean, it's not a lot of time, but take what you need.
Celerity has been – I've been with them for over 3 years, working with them through the Gateway Ad planning for the Gateway Ad District's last mile plan. This all goes through the Kentucky Wired. Very quickly, Kentucky Wired is working on the middle mile that'll bring high speed broadband to each community in Kentucky. It's that community's goal then. It's their responsibility to take it out and use it however they see fit. Right now, we've done everything we can do. We've done all of our homework. It's time to put a plan in place. We are coming to them as consultants to help us with the plan. They are currently working with Richmond and Lexington. We like what they're doing there, so we believe it's going to be an asset to help us when that last mile gets here, the middle mile gets here, we'll be prepared to how to handle it.
When do you expect to have all this implemented when we can say, gosh, we've got great high-speed internet access here in Morehead?
The latest projection from the KCNA, the internet authority with the state, is that it will be here, actually bringing it to us, to our community, by late 2019. It's our goal then to see how we're going to do it from there. We would like to have a ring at least in downtown for our government offices by early 2020, with a goal as maybe sometime between 20 and 22 to have it available to our residents. It's something, again, that you have to do it in stages because it's very costly, and you have to really make sure you're doing it and getting the best bang for your buck as far as being good stewards of our taxpayers' money.
Well, as always, Mayor, appreciate the time.
Appreciate you.
Morehead Mayor Jim Tom Trent here on Front Page. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. See you next time.